First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
Oh. Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springsteen of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
So, I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, "I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!"
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
And good evening, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, patriots, and jackbooted thugs alike. It is that time again of the TNT radio show, Tuesday Night Truth, on the My View Matters radio network. I am your host, Dale the Truth. And as always, we'll get right back into it. We won't waste any time. If you are already on the line and you want to get in on something we say, just press the one key on your phone if you're listening live. If you haven't called in yet and you'd like to, 858-683-1326, 858-683-1326. Now, we will start out, as always, with This Week in History. It is already, believe it or not, Tuesday, July the 29th. I had to look at that and make sure I was looking at that correctly. I thought surely it can't be, but it is. And I'll tell you what else it is. It is time to look at what the government is doing to you and what it's doing against you, never going to do anything for you. And let's go back and look at what happened on this date in history, at least on this week in history. George Washington said this week in 1786 that paper money is foolish and wicked. And as usual, George Washington was right, because see, George Washington wasn't in bed with any political parties. He actually warned us in his farewell address against political parties. Of course, the powers that be in the Uniparty, Democrats and Republicans, don't want to talk about that now, but Washington warned us about the dangers of political parties, not to mention he warned us about if we didn't have a balanced budget. He warned us about getting involved in foreign affairs, making enemies, making alliances, being in expensive wars, having false patriotism. He warned us about all of that in one address 200 and some years ago, back in 1786. Now, moving forward to a less believable and far less reputable president, we had this week in history going back, believe it or not, 50 years ago this week. And I guess we need to dig into this one a little bit for those who have not heard about this in the government indoctrination camps called public schools. We know that they don't teach this kind of stuff there. That would not be allowed. But we're talking about 50 years ago this week, President LBJ lying about the Gulf of Tonkin. And for you all that don't know about the Gulf of Tonkin, you had this American commitment to a war against Vietnam under LBJ. Good old, hey, LBJ, how many kids did you kill today? And we probably had 50,000 U.S. military personnel killed in our little war against Vietnam and over 2 million Vietnamese civilians committed by an incident that appears to involve more fiction than fact. Yes, the Gulf of Tonkin incident, believe it or not, 50 years ago this week, it was the basis of the Tonkin Gulf Resolution, which committed major American forces to the war in Vietnam. We had a couple of assaults on August 2nd and August 4th in 1964. So again, that'll be coming up this weekend, 50 years. And in retrospect now, it is clear that the alleged attack was little more than a transparent pretext for war. Delivering a little 1-2 punch, how convenient the media descriptions of the August 2nd attack as a, quote, unprovoked attack against a U.S. destroyer on, quote, routine patrol. You see, it hid the fact that the Maddox was providing support for South Vietnamese military operations against the North. And the alleged August 4th attacks now appear as a fabrication. And the official accounts want to attribute that quote-unquote error to confusion. If you don't know about the Gulf of Tonkin incident 50 years ago this week, we had a new De Soto patrol to North Vietnam coast that was launched by Maddox and the Sea Turner Joy. And the latter got radar signals that they believed to be another attack by the North Vietnamese. And for some 2 hours, the ships fired on radar targets and maneuvered vigorously amid electronic and visual reports of torpedoes. Now we know it's highly unlikely that any North Vietnamese forces were even in the area during this gunfight. Captain John J. Herrick even admitted that it was nothing more than an overeager sonar man who was hearing his own ship's propeller beat. And 19 years ago, we had General Vo Guyen Giap, commander-in-chief of the North Vietnamese forces, disavowing any involvement with the incident, though he did confirm the attack. Fast forward to about 9 years ago, we had the NSA. Yep, you know the good old NSA, the one part of government that actually listens to you, the one part of government that likes to peek while you sleep. Well, back in 2005, the NSA released hundreds of pages of previously classified documents relating to the now 50-year anniversary Gulf of Tonkin incident. The collection included an article in 2001 by agency historian Robert J. Hanyuk, which examined numerous reports indicating that the alleged attack never happened. In an elaborate piece of detective work, Mr. Hanyuk wrote in his 2000 article that 90% of the intercepts of North Vietnamese communications relevant to the alleged August 4th attack were omitted by the major agency documents going to policymakers. The overwhelming body of reports, if used, would have told the story that no attack ever happened, he said. And then we had Edwin E. Moyes, a historian at Clemson, wrote a book on the Gulf of Tonkin incident. And he said that the agency did the right thing in making public Mr. Hanyuk's damning case because a lot of people didn't know what's going on. And I'm quite sure a lot of people today don't really understand still what happened with the Gulf of Tonkin, because you're not taught about what happened in the Gulf of Tonkin. We're not supposed to talk about that. See, that was a false flag operation. Go look it up. Go look up some of the Gulf of Tonkin false flag operations on YouTube if you want. And see, the problem is, back in 1964, good old LBJ needed to get some more troops out there in North Vietnam. And in order to extend the U.S. involvement in the Vietnam War, America was going to need some kind of motive, going to need some kind of boogeyman. And LBJ knew that he would need a pretext to justify pushing America into a full-scale war. And as now we know from history, the Vietnam War is responsible for those nearly 60,000 soldiers of American descent. But how many people out there know that it was initiated by a well-documented false flag? That's what I want to ask you people. How many of y'all knew that President Johnson used this fake event to urge Congress to pass the Gulf of Tonkin Resolution, an act which granted him the authority to deploy more American troops into Vietnam without officially declaring war, despite the deaths of the nearly 60,000 Americans? The Vietnam War was therefore not really a war at all. And now we know why they refer to it as the Vietnam conflict, right? Among other things. So there you go, this week, 50 years ago. Finally, another piece of history that I doubt that many people in our audience heard about from their government indoctrination camps with six-figure workers running them. There was an incident that happened all the way back in 1735, we're going to go way back in the way back machine. There was a case of a man by the name of Peter Zinger. How many of y'all out there are familiar with Peter Zinger without going and looking it up? Well, we're talking this week in 1735 that Peter Zinger was acquitted, sometimes known as John Peter Zinger the First. And this was what I think is one of the most important events in American journalism history, because there was a libel trail of John Peter Zinger. He was the printer of the New York Weekly Journal. Now, Zinger had arrived in New York from Germany in 1710, and he served as an apprentice to William Bradford. He was the printer of the New York Gazette. And all the way up in 1733, we had the New York governor, colonial governor at the time, William Cosby, stirred up a great controversy by prosecuting the intern governor, Rip Van Dam, and he removed the Chief Justice Lewis Morse from the court. So imagine what a great controversy if you had a governor that prosecuted an interim governor and removed a Chief Justice. Maybe it would be a start today, some people were telling me. But these wealthy and powerful men established an opposition newspaper called the New York Weekly Journal, and they hired John Peter Zinger as their printer and editor. and the Weekly Journal printed numerous articles that were critical of the government until Governor Cosby just couldn't take it any longer. So there you go. In 1734, yes, the governor had the journalist, John Peter Zinger, arrested and put in jail incommunicado for 10 months. And finally, this week in 1735, after 10 months, Zinger was brought to trial and charged with seditious libel. He was defended by a Philadelphia lawyer at the time, who maybe you've heard of, named Andrew Hamilton, brother to Alex Hamilton. The prosecution argued that the sole fact of publication was sufficient to convict and exclude the truth from the evidence. Hamilton admitted that Zinger published offending stories. Oh, no. The government was offended by his stories. But Hamilton said that it was not libel unless it was false and it was true. Kind of like we bring you the truth here. They don't like it, but it's not libel and it's the truth. And Hamilton made an eloquent appeal to the jury to judge both the law and the facts. And as a result, Zinger was acquitted. Now, this case of not guilty verdict, it established truth as a defense against libel, and it was a landmark victory for the freedom of press. It also set a precedent against judicial tyranny in libel suits. It has long been held since the first report of Zinger's victory in court came in his own newspaper, the New York Weekly Journal, back this week in 1735. The front page of that date contains the abbreviated story of his trial. It says the jury returned in 10 minutes and found me not guilty. Now, although the New York Weekly Journal of the weekly trial had nothing on the trial itself, there's a printer's note at the end of the last column. It says the printer, now having got his liberty again, designs, God willing, to finish and publish the charter of the city of New York next week. So read your newspapers carefully, as they sometimes whisper things to you if you would actually take the time to listen. That's important, because too many people don't understand the freedom of the press that we have fought for. It doesn't just mean the big master newspapers. So that's our week in history. And we got a lot of stuff on our plate that I want to cover this week. And I guess I'll get right to it. We haven't talked a lot about ISIS or ISIS or whatever this terrorist group is that the United States government helped to train. We're not going to back away from that. That's a fact. But another fact is the threats of extermination that this group has put out there against Christians. We don't talk a lot about religion on this show, but I just want to know why we don't hear more about it. Well, it kind of falls in conveniently. The stars align just right, so the boogeyman is truly a boogeyman here. And what I mean by that is virtually all Christians have fled the northern Iraq city of Mosul, a community that Christians had called home for 1,700 years. And you see, last week, as the story goes, about a week and a half ago now, the ISIS, or ISIS, whatever you want to call them, Islamic State of Iraq and Syria, their thugs ordered that all Christians leave the city by noon of Saturday, July 19th, or pay an exorbitant fine, or face, quote, death by the sword. I'm surprised that CNN reported this. CNN usually never wants to get any favor with Christians, but like I said, the stars align just right, because the boogeyman, the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria, ISIS, ISIS, whatever you want to call them, they truly are trying to run the Christians out. Now, the New York Times noted July 19th that since Saddam Hussein had been ousted, Mosul's Christians had seen their numbers dwindle from over 30,000 to just a few thousand. So again, that's what mainstream media was not telling you for the last decade or two decades, which is Saddam Hussein was not a radical religious person. He was hardly religious at all. And Christians were not being oppressed under him. Now, you don't hear that, do you? Because all we heard was the neocon talking points about Saddam's death chambers, and Saddam did this, and Saddam's sons did that. But why is it that there are far more Christians being persecuted after Saddam's gone than when he was in power. That's something people need to focus on. Now, again, according to the New York Times, the numbers have dwindled from over 30,000 Christians to just a few thousand. But once ISIS had swept into the city of Mosul, Iraq, the numbers dwindled down to next to nothing. And you had some non-Christian sects that had been even more ill-treated than Christians, especially those with elements of Christianity and Zoroastrianism and the Shabaks, who are often described as Shiites because their language is close to Persian. They were all being persecuted. And estimates by some human rights groups have put the death toll from the ISIS violence against Christians and Christian-related groups at nearly 6,000 people in the first 6 months of this year. And the New York Times, if they're to believe, they're giving us an assessment that more than 600,000 people have been driven from their homes just in the last month. 600,000 people. So that's what's going on when you don't have Saddam Hussein in control. So you draw your own conclusions, people. Now, a story that I think maybe on a happier note is Edward Snowden is still working on surveillance systems. Only now he's working to foil the surveillance systems. You see, the former NSA computer analyst who is living in asylum in Moscow said this week that he is designing an encryption system that will protect the confidential information of journalists, doctors, lawyers, and others with professional obligations of confidentiality to their clients. An unfortunate side effect of the development of all these new surveillance technologies is that the work of journalism has become immeasurably harder than it has ever been in the past. We just talked about how they felt about true journalists back 250 to 300 years ago. And Snowden said in a lengthy interview 2 weeks ago, between a week and a half now and 2 weeks ago, with The Guardian, that, quote, journalists have to be particularly conscious about any sort of network signaling, any sort of connection, any sort of license plate reading device that they pass on their way to a meeting point, any place they use their credit card, any place they take their phone, those smartphones we've been talking about, any email contact they have with the source, because that very first contact before encrypted communications are established is enough to give it all away. You see, electronic communications, folks, of doctors, lawyers, accountants, and even clergy requires protection in this age of digital surveillance. Snowden said if we confess something to our priest inside a church that would be private, is it any different than if we send our pastor a private email confessing a crisis in our life? Well, I guess we could argue that maybe in a confessional or at a church or with your clergy, maybe you're not being recorded. And I say maybe because I can't even swear to that. But Snowden did this interview with The Guardian, and he described activities by NSA personnel quite removed from any interest in national security. I know it's hard to believe they were doing things to watch over you that had nothing to do with security. I'm sure you're shocked. But during the course of their work, the NSA employees stumbled across something that was completely unrelated to their work. For example, an intimate nude photo of someone in a sexually compromising situation. So what do? Well, they turn around their chair and they show their coworkers and they giggle and they share it and they pass it around and say, hey, that's great. Send that to Bill. And Bill sends it to George, who sends it to Tom. And sooner or later, this person's quote-unquote alleged private whole life has been seen by all these other people. Now, the good news is that Snowden told The Guardian he is seeking foundation money for his encryption project. So for Edward Snowden, we say, we are glad, very glad that Mr. Snowden is still doing the right thing. Now, we'll cover one more quick piece before we go to our bottom of the hour break. And again, if you want to get in after the break, as always, give us a call at 858-683-1326, 858-683-1326. 683-1326. We'll cover some quick quotes here. Last week we did a little bit of an in-depth piece about Common Core. And Eagle Forum President Phyllis Schlafly, who has been a constitutionalist for decades now, she's been monitoring the declining educational performances in America for decades. And she said that, quote, even homeschooling may not help if colleges all convert to the new testing standards based on Common Core guidelines. The tests are what drive curricula, and homeschool curricula will need to adapt to the new test in order for students to be admitted to college. How convenient. So even if you're homeschooled, they'll still have a way to try to work you into their little work-life package. We already talked about the Christians that are having to flee their home. And this other notable quote over here comes from 45-year-old retired Army Sergeant Maun Abu, who was a Christian. And he was forced to abandon his small business and home with his wife and four children as the Islamist ISIS took over Mosul and gave Christians three choices, like we said: become followers of Muhammad, pay the fine, or die. And Army Officer Maun Abu says, quote, I went to the Islamic State religious court to make sure that their demands were authentic. And the man there told me that I should leave my house, car, money, and properties behind. All that I want is to return to the city that I grew up in and that I still have nice memories of. I have strong faith that we will return sooner or later because the cruel rule of the state will not last forever. Think about that, folks. The cruel rule of the state will not last forever. And that could be the Islamic ISIS. That could be our big government jackboot thugs over here like Lindsey Graham and Mitch McConnell and John McCain and all these guys, John Kerry, and all these thugs that are in Congress standing up to the state. We'll cover a couple more stories here when we come back from the break. You are listening to the TNT radio show on the My View Matters Radio Network. Call in at 858-683-1326. And we'll be back. We'll be right back.
First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springson of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email MyViewMatters at AOL.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
And we're back, and we thank you for staying with us here on the TNT Radio Show on the My View Matters Radio Network. Now, we got a couple of things that we want to cover. We'll cover a statewide one, if you will, before we get back into some more international relations, since that seems to be the theme of our show tonight. But just taking a break, we don't talk about elections a lot right now. We definitely don't talk about the U.S. Senate race, which is going to be just a travesty of, I don't know what you want to call it, embarrassment of overspent campaigns of one liar against another. We don't talk about that much. But we are fascinated about the other elections, and we'll get back into election mode probably next week. We know that Fancy Farm is coming up Saturday, and no, I don't really plan on going down to Fancy Farm. Next week, we'll talk a little bit more about the not Fancy Farm. Is that what it's called? My friends that are doing the one down there in the area around Lexington, Kentucky, my friend Michael Maggard has, I guess it's called Not So Fancy Farm. I got to get it right, folks. Nothing Fancy Farm. I'll get it right in a minute. I apologize. My brain is scattered today. We'll talk a little bit more about Nothing Fancy Farm next week, because that will be a week from Saturday. And people will get back into campaign mode after we get into August and September for Labor Day. So then we'll get more into that. The one exception that we'll bring out tonight is about the governor's race for next year. Now, we haven't made any apologies about the fact that we are standing behind Jamie Comer. I haven't seen anybody else get in the race that would convince me otherwise. And technically, Jamie Comer's not in the race yet, but our agriculture commissioner, James Comer, and former Metro Councilman and failed mayoral candidate Hal Heiner seem to be the Republican candidates. And there's a Bluegrass poll that just came out today, actually updated a few minutes before we went to the air. And it said that Kentucky voters remain largely unfamiliar with the candidates for governor. Well, that makes sense to me, since it's a year and a half away, but the primary is only about 9 to 10 months away. So I guess it's important to talk a little bit about. And then you got a third politician expected to make his intentions clear this week at the aforementioned Fancy Farm, and that's our friend Jamie Comer, who we expect to announce his candidacy this weekend. And the other candidates are Hal Heiner, and the con man, Jack Conway, the lifetime politician of his own, wanting to be like Mitch McConnell, be a lifetime politician. And these three men, Conway, Heiner, and Comer, were viewed favorably by less than 1 in 4 voters. Now, the Bluegrass poll put that out, and over in Election Herald Leader, they are trying to make the insinuation or the assessment that this suggests there's a wide-open race with room for others to join in. Well, we know they want other big names to join in because we know they want them to spend the money. We've talked about this. If it's a small constitutional grassroots candidate who isn't going to give them money, well, they don't want to talk about it. They're very clear in their hypocrisy there at the mainstream press. We talk about all candidates here. We definitely also talk about the Libertarian candidate. And I know you get in big trouble if we start talking about the Libertarian candidate, but David Patterson expects to be on the ballot for U.S. Senate on the Libertarian side. And this is where I have to remind people again, for all the neocons wearing their Depends and pissing their pants when they hear me talk about a Libertarian, because I'm telling you the truth about the election, it does not mean that I'm endorsing somebody over your lifetime politician, jackboot thug, Rhino Mitch McConnell. Doesn't mean I'm endorsing anybody. Stop lying. We know that you like to follow me on the Facebook. We know that the Bringers crew and the McCarthys and all those guys like to stalk me out on the social networks. We get that. So all that being said, David Patterson is another candidate in the race for U.S. Senate, but he ain't spending the big money, so they don't want to talk about him. And hence that plays right into this poll and what the Lexington Herald leader is saying about how they think, oh, there's a wide open race for governor and there's a lot of room for other candidates. Well, they want those candidates coming in and spending money. Now, Scott Jennings, the neocon Republican operative who is allegedly not involved with any candidates, says data suggesting that existing candidates are lesser known. It could encourage fence sitters to be more bullish on getting in. So I guess that means they want somebody like a Crid Llewellyn, which wouldn't be bad to get her in that Democratic side. I guess they want somebody like a Kathy Bailey on the Republican side. They want these guys to jump into the race. Now, of the three men so far we've talked about, Conway's got the highest name recognition because he's been a lifetime politician. He's had two runs for statewide office, including the big ass-kicking that he got handed to him by Senator Rand Paul in 2010. Still 61% of registered voters said they have a neutral or no opinion of Conway, a Democrat. He was viewed favorably by only 22%. If it were Conway, I'd be worried, Jennings said. Well, I would too. Now, Comer and Heiner, both Republicans, are equally unknown. 77% were either neutral or had no opinion of either man. And this is about all I'm going to spend time on this because I'm kind of reading this on site. I just wanted to make sure I covered it, because it's way early, folks. So I don't get too upset by the fact that they claim only 15% of people have a favorable view of Comer and only 11% have a favorable view of Heiner. Because guess what? Their unfavorable numbers are right there, too. It doesn't mean anything. Everyone's either neutral or has no opinion. So we'll let that play out as before we get back into foreign policy. So we talked a little bit about what's going on in Syria and a little bit about what's going on in Iraq. And we talked a little bit about our local elections. Now, we're going to switch gears in a moment. I see one of our friends is wanting to weigh in. We're going to switch gears in a moment, if time allows, to get into a topic I didn't want to talk about, but I guess I'm going to have to. It's just foreign aid. It goes back to our international flavor. But I believe our good friend Paul Holliger from Stop Invisible Taxes is on the line. And let's see what we have triggered him to call in about. Paul, are you with us?
You're talking about elections. That's one of my pet projects in Kentucky.
Good. I didn't want to talk about elections this early, but I thought I'd throw that out there.
I know. Okay. Well, sometimes when you throw stuff out there, you will trigger someone's hot button. And that's clearly one of my hot buttons.
Yep.
I think that even on a larger scale, then the electorate is just not real familiar with any of these announced candidates. The thing that bugs me about the whole election process is that when I was a kid growing up, Dale, there was an opportunity for a last-minute candidate, a populist, if you will, to get into the race.
Yeah.
Okay, but the two parties, the Democrats and the Republicans in Kentucky, have made that almost impossible to do. In fact,
of course.
It used to be that a partisan candidate could end up on the primary ballot, as late as a month before the actual election. Well, these two parties have made that impossible these days. You have to be announced 5 months ahead of time, and then come the early part of January, they lock everybody else out. Now,
you've got to be announced by January, Paul, and not only that, they've stacked the deck so much, and Paul is exactly right to put the blame where it lies on the uniparty, the Democrat and Republican side of the same party, because the reason we know the blame all goes with them is because they hold all the elected seats who make these laws. It's funny how that works out. And now, if you're running an independent or a third-party candidate, as our good friend Ken Molman would tell us, you have to at least file some kind of declaration of that much earlier than you used to. Used to you had until August to decide on that. So now they have you jumping through all these hoops, and they kind of get you from behind and in front. They do this double political penetration on you because you got to tell them way ahead of time that you have intentions, but you got to spend the entire intentions period before you actually file trying to gain a signature. So it's almost like they don't want any competition, Paul.
Well, they don't. And again, they also don't want responsibility for the messes that they create once they get their people in. And, you know, you wanted to head down the road of foreign aid. Who are the parties that have made sure that the United States foreign aid policy is, first of all, it's inconsistent. We're not helping our friends in the way that we need to help them, but we are encouraging our enemies to go and work against our interests globally, okay? And these are the same Democrats and Republicans that are fixing the electoral system. They're the ones that create the rules that keep other folks out.
Well, we
and yet they're also
the
responsible.
Gangs don't like somebody coming on their turf. And the Crips and the Bloods, ironically, they do the blue and the red thing too, since we always have our red states and blue states. The Crips and the Bloods don't want another gang coming onto their turf. They want to make sure only those two gangs, and they'll put on a good front. They'll do some collateral damage and shoot up a few gang members on each side because they want to put on that front. But behind the scenes, they don't want anybody else coming in there. And the reason they don't, Paul, as you and I know, and a lot of the listeners do, is we have all these people fighting over who is the worst in the race. And we'll use this Senate race here. We have Allison Blunderland Slimes and the traitor turtle, Mitch McConnell. And the two of them, we have all these fights on the two sides, the Democrat side and the Republican side of the same coin, talking about who is worse in this race instead of looking at other options. And the reason they do that, and the reason they try to keep anybody else out, because they know if you just give a third party, not quote-unquote the third party, any third party, whether it's, you know, big T or small T, if you just give a third party the opportunity to come into the race, well, then 34% can win a three-way race, Paul, and that's not going to be something that makes the big two happy.
I know that in that particular race, a year or so ago, Independent Kentucky actually asked Allison Grimes where she stood on making making third party people, making it easier for them to get in to the
mm-hmm.
race. And she actually stated, and I think this was on KET, that she was quite okay with the status quo. She didn't feel a need that minor parties or minor candidates should have anything made any easier. She was quite content. So,
well, it works well for her.
She,
I mean, it's prepared that way in staging for the primary. We saw how they did poor Ed Marksberry. We knew he wasn't going to get the big party support in the primary. And I felt bad for him that he finally, between his own personal issues and health issues, gave up on trying to get all those signatures. But it's staged that way in the primary. And then, like you said, if they get to November, of course, Allison's not going to want them there competing because, again, we're trying to have a fight between who is the worser or the lesser of evils or who is the worser or the worst of the evils, bad grammar there, however you want to say it, and that's what they're doing. They want to talk about who's worse rather than looking at all the options. And I would still go back to what my good friend, the late, great Gatewood Galbraith said when he would stand there in a debate with two other candidates in the occasion that he could actually get into a debate. And he pointed at both and say, I agree with what they're both saying about each other. That's why he shouldn't elect either of them. And he was right, because that's all they're going to do.
Was.
I mean, we hear Allison talk about how terrible it is that Mitch McConnell's not helping jobs because he made the statement about how it's not his job to create jobs. And Mitch comes back and says, oh, Allison's hurting jobs because she hates coal, and she thinks you're the Antichrist if you've ever got anywhere from coal. So they go back and forth, but Paul had heard either one of them, Allison, Blunderland Slimes, or the traitor turtle Mitch McConnell, have you heard either one of them put forth a positive plan about what they're going to do to create jobs?
Well, I think I can say this next statement with absolute confidence. I actually know in the election between McConnell and Grimes, I actually know who the loser is going to be in that election. I actually know the people, exactly. People of Kentucky are going to be the loser. You're 100% on target. So,
I mean, if you think Senator McConnell is good for the state, if people think the senator who's been in over 30 years is good for the state, or they think that the Secretary of State, Grimes, is a suitable counter, they don't really have a firm, healthy grasp on the reality that our Commonwealth and our citizens are facing, Paul. These party alliances are only going to get you so far. And I opened up the show talking about George Washington warned people about political parties. But we know the Democrats, they sure don't want to hear what old dead white guys have to say. And the Republicans are too worried about giving fellatio to Lincoln the traitor. They don't care about what George Washington had to say. But again, we know that you've got to put on this united front if you're those two parties. Look what's going to happen in Fancy Farm. I truly doubt that that Ken Goldman's folks will even get to speak for David Patterson. As much garbage as they put up at Fancy Farm. I remember a year or two ago he was down there reporting on it and telling us how it was. And I don't plan on going down there because it's the same old song and dance. If I'm going to watch a professional wrestling event, Paul, I'm going to watch the ones who at least put on the good uniforms and take the good stairways. I'm not going to watch bad professional wrestling.
Well, you know, we've been talking about everything's geared toward the uniparty. I think Fancy Farm's another one of those things that it's simply another stage for the Democrats and Republicans to whip up the frenzy among their base. But it is clearly not. It's clearly not a forum to discuss the issues of the day. It never was intended as that, and therefore it doesn't happen. But what I don't understand is why do these politicians feel the need to go out down there and behave like grade school children, name-calling and taunting the other side without coming up with any type of meaningful solutions for the problems that face Kentucky?
But it's part of the script.
I don't understand that.
It's part of the play. It's part of the script that they're reading, Paul. They have to go by the script. The major party leaders.
Time for us to rewrite the script.
We want to put the script through the shredder and have people do some improvisation instead of going by the script. But we know where Allison's coming from. Her daddy ran that party for years. We know how tight they are to the Clinton administration, and we know where McConnell's coming from. So I don't see how there will be anything interesting there unless they actually let David Patterson into the wrestling event. But I tell people this all the time, Paul. They look at you like you're insane if you want to let somebody else on the field of play. And I say field of play because they treat it like it's a sporting event. And the problem with that is they think that every sporting event is supposed to be one-on-one. It's got to be two parties. They think it's got to be Coke versus Pepsi. It's got to be Ford versus Chevy. They think it's got to be shit sandwich number one or shit sandwich number two. And I keep trying to tell these people, when you're choosing between shit sandwiches, well, eat shit, because that's what you're going to do. I hate to say it like that. It's not a G-rated show, and we never pretend that it was. But again, that's what you're going to do. You're going to end up eating a shit sandwich. Everyone fights over this race, like I said, over who's worse, instead of looking at their other options. And we're going to tell people between now and November about all the different write-in options. And I would like to see another candidate get on the ballot, not just a third candidate. I think it would be great if there's a third and fourth and fifth. And the Republicans, they love to tell us how they're about capitalism and competition, Paul. But what is it you've said on this show many a times, and I've said it myself, it's not a capitalist system we're dealing with. What is the system we're dealing with, Paul?
It's corporatism, also known as fascism, and one of our political friends that you know, Paul Hasse, actually calls it an oligarchy. So all of that exists today, and from what I can tell, we've only had this level of disenchantment and hatred, if you will, of our government only two times in this country's history. And in both of those times, it led to revolutionary events occurring. So we're in a period of time where maybe a lot of people don't want to acknowledge the historical significance, but I don't think there's anything that they can do. They're going to participate whether they want to or not. So I think it's a good time to start getting prepared for what's going to happen, and that is
you're using big words,
reformation soon.
Yeah, you're scaring them with those big words you're using. When you use these multisyllabic words, it scares them. I tell you what we're living in, Paul. Did you ever see a movie, and it was not supposed to be a documentary. It was supposed to be a comedy slash spoof. Did you ever see a movie called Idiocracy?
No.
Oh, man. Idiocracy was a comedy from several years ago, and it shows you how dumbed down society can be. And you just got to watch it sometimes, folks, because Idiocracy is a movie where basically all they are is one big sporting event. It's rah, 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 and this side versus that side, and everybody's pushing big buttons that do their job for them at the fast food restaurants. Maybe we need something with big buttons instead of letting fast food workers tell us how they need $15 an hour. But the bottom line is, in this movie, it shows you how society can fall apart. And I always tell people it was not supposed to be a documentary. It was supposed to be a farce, and it was put out by the same Mike Judge that did stuff like Beavis and Butthead. And basically, it was about this dystopian society full of extremely stupid people. I don't know how else to say it, but it's talking about how advertising and commercialism and anti-intelligence is basically running the system. And you got a society that doesn't think for itself, and it's devoid of any intellectual curiosity, any creativity, any kind of social responsibility, and they're just a bunch of walking, mind-numb robots. And this is a movie from about 8 years ago, folks, Idiocracy. If you want to go watch it sometimes, it's kind of achieved a cult following, and I think because too many of us are looking at this thing thinking we're living in this society. Because in the movie, at one point, they were harassing people for reading books, and they said, "What are you doing reading those words in that book?" And again, Mike Judge put this movie out 8 or 9 years ago, and it wasn't supposed to be a documentary, folks. But the problem is, it's what we have become. The spoof has basically become the election cycle. The spoof has become reality. And again, you've got people out there arguing that, oh, if you let someone else in the race, they're going to steal a vote. They're going to split a vote from somebody else. And that's the establishment's way of throwing a tantrum over your decision to not vote for their crappy candidate. If your pick doesn't win, it's because they were unable to win over enough votes. We deplore the sense of entitlement that people have for their pick. Again, if you fight them in their primary, oh, they'll tell you, oh, you're terrible. You're a horrible Republican or Democrat or fill in the blank. It's got to be one of those two, because they're the same uniparty, two sides of the coin, and they'll tell you how horrible you are. They don't want you in the party, and they told us publicly in social networks and recordings that we have still here on archive how we weren't wanted in the party. But guess what happened, folks? After we got through the primary, oh, now we got to have our kumbaya moment, as Mr. Springsteen would say, and they want you all to come together and have a unification party and a unity picnic, and a rah-rah-rah rally. And now, well, you got to vote for our candidate, because if you don't, that other candidate's going to win. Give somebody something to vote for. If you complain that the candidate is stealing or splitting the vote away, you are simply throwing a tantrum. You are simply throwing a tantrum. It is the oligarchy that both Paul Hollinger and Paul Hossie have talked about. When you are forcing people to go out and raise thousands and thousands of signatures that our good friend Ken Moman, who hosts the Sunday night show Liberty Unbridled, knows about, they spend their whole campaign raising signatures while the Democrat and Republicans are raising money from the corporates, from the establishment, from the non-government organizations, from the unions, from the Right to Life, from the trade organizations, from the Chamber of Commerce, the Louisville Inc. folks. So how in the world do we get ahead if you don't give them a chance to get on the ballot? It's really scary when you have big government Republicans and big government socialist Democrats and they're running against each other on TV, but behind the scenes, they're running to keep you off the ballot. You've got to stop electing them. You've got to stop re-electing them. There's a great bumper sticker, small L libertarian bumper sticker, that said re-elect nobody. But the problem is, in this country, everybody looks at their congressman and says, oh, my congressman's great. It's all those other SOBs that are bad. No, your congressman's pretty bad, too. You stand up against the whole system, or you accept the system. You know, they want to tell you it's all or nothing. You've heard this, oh, either with us or against us. Well, you're either with the Uniparty, or you're against the Uniparty. And you're either with Liberty, or you're for the Uniparty. It's time for you to make some decisions.
Well, they're here. I locked the door, but I can see them through the window. One of them is waving at me to shut down. I'm giving him the finger. I'll shut down when I'm goddamn good and ready.
You want answers?
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.